Well, welcome to Dairy Livestream. I'm your host, Corey Geiger, managing editor of Hordes Dairymen. We're broadcasting from the Cheese Cave, our studio in downtown Fort Atkinson at the historic W.D. Hord & Sons Company building commissioned by Wisconsin Governor W.D. Hord and founder of Hordes Dairymen. Our conversation today will focus on the hot topic, sustainability. What can we do on the farm? Is sustainability a challenge or is sustainability an opportunity? During this conversation, we will walk through sustainability as it relates to the dairy front and why it's important that dairy leads this conversation as opposed to being led by this conversation. Let that soak in for a moment. There's a big difference between leading and being led. This is the first episode in a two-part series on sustainability. On August 4th, we will have a follow-up conversation, Sustainability, Dairy's Position in the Marketplace. For those joining us live, please share with your friends. This webcast will be available on our Hordes Dairymen YouTube channel this Thursday. That's tomorrow. Dairy Livestream is also available in podcast form on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and anywhere you like to listen to your podcasts. Search Dairy Livestream from the convenience of your smartphone. Our world continues to evolve each day, and we're asked to make better use of our precious resources. America's dairy farm families have practiced this through actions and deeds as each of us strives to leave our farms and land in better shape for the next generation. In many ways, that care for our land, our animals, and people is a big part of the sustainability story. Before we hear from Robin White, let's go to our first poll question. What does sustainability mean to you? You can select more than one. Improve water quality, enhance air quality, conserve soil health, reduce greenhouse gases, sustain cash flow on the farm. So go ahead and answer that. And this, you know, if you're a dairy farmer or if you're a consumer, these answers might be a little bit different. But I know we have a lot of dairy farmers and processors that join Dairy Livestream each webcast. So, Caitlin, let's go ahead and give people maybe, there we go. Caitlin, cut it off. So we'll see the answer here. So the leading item here is sustained cash flow on the farm. And during our dress rehearsal yesterday, Mark Stevenson, who's a regular commentator, brought this question up because we did believe that that'd be the number one answer. But all these other parts are part of the sustainability story, and they all received over two-thirds votes from you. So that's really important. To open up this discussion, we invite Virginia Tech's Robin White to Dairy Livestream. Robin's roots trace back to Washington State, where she was early to join the intersection of the conversation on sustainability and dairy. Now an assistant professor at Virginia Tech, Robin focuses on animal-environment interface with the overarching goal of leveraging animal nutrition to enhance sustainability of food production systems. She works towards that goal every day by doing these three things: conducting basic research, evaluating factors regulating rumen function, applied research testing strategies to enhance feed efficiency, and big picture projects looking at the socioeconomic impact of livestock production. Robin, this dairy sustainability discussion has many layers at the local, state, national, and global arena. Tell us more about the opportunities.
Yeah, thanks so much for the introduction, Corey. I'm really pleased to be here to share some of my thoughts about the sustainability story in the dairy industry. And it's always really fun for me to talk on this subject because I think that dairy has such an incredible story when we're talking about sustainability. It was really fun for this poll question to go right before me because one of the things that I wanted to share is how the UN defines sustainability. And that is a food system that contributes to food security and nutrition for all people in such a way that the economic, social, cultural, and environmental bases to generate food security and nutrition for all people in future generations is safeguarded. So I like to take that very long definition and kind of break it down into its individual elements to kind of unpack what they're actually trying to get at here. And for most people, when they hear this sustainability word, they think of it as a challenge, and they think of it specifically through the environmental lens, perhaps thinking about things like regulation that might be coming down the pipeline, or, you know, how we can respond to calls for net zero production. But I want to highlight the fact that just like everybody on our poll question was able to identify, the environmental aspects of dairy sustainability go well beyond just carbon. They include things like our interaction with water, soil, land, biodiversity, ecosystem services, and incorporating all of those elements of environmentalism into our definitions and quantifications of sustainability is really the direction that we're headed. In the meantime, though, I do think it's really important to highlight that carbon becomes a big part of the discussion in our current climate. And the dairy industry in the US has some really positive attributes when it comes to carbon emissions. The carbon footprint of milk is extremely favorable in comparison to similar products, and particularly when you express that carbon footprint on a nutrient basis. In some of our work, we identified that if you eliminated dairy animals from the agricultural system, the net change in the total US greenhouse gas emissions would be something like 0.5% to 1%. So on a carbon basis, the dairy industry actually has a lot of really positive things to discuss about current production practices and the types of products that we produce. We also have a great story when it comes to nutrition, right? Nutrition is another important part of the sustainability question. We're supposed to be providing food security and nutrition for all people. So again, you know, some of the work that we've been doing trying to understand the role of dairy in the US food production system suggests that dairy products only produce enough energy to feed 70 million people, enough protein to feed almost 170 million people, and enough calcium to feed the entire US population. So again, really, this is a phenomenal industry doing really exciting things to move toward this UN definition of sustainability, which is this balance of, you know, environmental, nutrition, economic, social, cultural attributes. On the the economic side, obviously sustaining cash on the farm is a really good thing. And one of the reasons why we've been able to get to this place as an industry is through continued investment in improving efficiency. And we have really well-documented studies highlighting the links between efficiency and environmental impact. And so continuing to work to enhance efficiency is gonna improve water footprints, land footprints, greenhouse gas emissions. While we're doing that, though, we need to still think about the broader picture, biodiversity conservation, ecosystem services, soil health, these types of things that aren't always as well aligned with efficiency improvements. And I think where there's really a tremendous opportunity or a challenge, depending on how you want to view it, moving forward, is in this social cultural area, because as we continue to have more of a disconnect between food producers and food consumers, communicating our story on sustainability becomes absolutely paramount, because the average food consumer doesn't know these numbers and they don't know how far the dairy industry has come toward the goal of enhancing sustainable food production and the tremendous opportunities that continue to present themselves within this industry to be a solution for sustainable food. So that communication could be presented as a challenge, particularly given that trust of information in societies is at an all-time low. But I would argue that that's actually the perfect time to enter this conversation, to be able to tell our story on our terms. And you know, so that's kind of my probably slightly more than 5 minute overview of the different aspects of sustainability and some of the really neat things and neat statistics related to the dairy industry and how it fits into that bigger picture.
Well, thank you, Robin. And as a reminder to our audience, we have some questions rolling in already. As you hear from our panelists and you have a question for them, please submit it in the GoToWebinar control panel under the question portal. And my coworker, Associate Editor Caitlin Allen, will get those up on the screen and we'll ask those to our panelists in the second half of the broadcast. Before we hear from Marilyn Hershey, let's go to another poll question. When comparing 2017 to 2007, producing a gallon of milk in the U.S. requires select one of the following: 30% less water, 21% less land, 19% smaller carbon footprint, all of the above, or none of the above. So go ahead and answer that poll question. And we are well over 50% here, so we'll go ahead and see what our audience said. In our audience, 89% of you got it correct. The correct answer is all of the above. And that's according to a comprehensive peer-reviewed research project that really delved into the details of dairy. We welcome Marilyn Hershey to Dairy Livestream. Marilyn is a lifelong dairy farmer who's actively involved on a daily basis in her family's Our Joy farm in Cochranville, Pennsylvania. What I appreciate about Marilyn is not only her strong work ethic, but her ability to take a rather large topic and break it down into smaller portions so the rest of us can join the conversation and help create a win for dairy. Marilyn is a dairy farmer. Share with us why it's important that dairy is a leader on this conversation.
Thank you, Corey, and thank you for this opportunity. It's great to be here and always great to talk about this topic. I agree with both Robin and yourself that, you know what, sustainability is a challenge and it's also an opportunity. And I think in the way dairy is leading and has made decisions to lead in the past 12, 18 months is helping it become more of an opportunity as opposed to a challenge. We all know that sustainability can be defined in so many different ways. And so first of all, I just want to talk a little bit about what Duane and I are doing on our dairy farm in Pennsylvania. We milk 800 cows. We're about 45 minutes north of the Chesapeake Bay. So, and I grew up dairy farming in this area. So the Chesapeake Bay was always in the crosshairs of us as farming. And practices have changed in the past 30 years. And when we look at the improvements we have made for water quality, for soil quality, they have all been good practices. So, you know, I would say we, even though sustainability was not the buzzword 30 years ago, it is certainly something that farmers have been participating in taking care of the land and the environment and the animals for as long as we've been farming. And science will help us to learn how to do that better as we continue to move forward. Duane and I in 2017, we put a digester on the farm. The digester is used to create electricity. The extra electricity goes back on the grid for the Philadelphia Electric Company. We're also able to bring in some food waste and bring some of that off of get it out of landfills and be able to use that food waste to produce some methane as well. The byproduct coming out of the digester is used back in the stalls for sand. So there's a recycling process there as well. And that's just to give you a little, you know, idea. We don't all have digesters, obviously, on our farms, but we all have things that we're doing, whether it's stream bank fencing, whether it's no-till. There's a lot of ways that we, through our crops, through the land we have, the soil quality we have, the manure nutrients that are nourishing the land, there's all ways that we are helping to be more sustainable on our farms. And just want to speak a little bit as chair of DMI, because our checkoff under the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy made a very strong commitment last year to be carbon neutral by 2050. And, you know, a farmer talked to me a couple weeks ago about this, and he said, I think you got the cart before the horse by coming out with these comments. And you know what? We did, okay? We know we got the cart before the horse. We know we don't have all the answers in how we're going to get there. But it's very important that we come out with that statement and come out with that commitment, because in coming out with that ourselves, we're in charge of the narrative. We're in charge of the conversation. We have farmers at the table who are helping to make this decision. And knowing other countries across the globe, they are not, the farmers in those other countries don't have an opportunity to participate in the conversation because there's a lot of regulations coming down, because there's a lot of brands, a lot of consumers that are interested, that are concerned about about 2050 and net zero goals. I want to be in charge of that. I want to have a voice at the table. I want farmers to have input on how that gets done. We know that this has to be profitable for farmers. This cannot come on the backs of farmers. As a farmer myself, I don't want something coming down the pipe that's going to cost me more money. We all know that that milk check is stretched as far as it'll go. But we also know that there's opportunity there. And manure, you know, if we continue and work towards better technologies, we know that manure can be used in some very unique ways to become profitable for us. And so I know that's one area, you know, how can that manure be a commodity, not a nuisance as some people would define it? So how can it be a commodity to us as farmers and give us money back? I think we as farmers, when we look at net zero, we think of carbon and carbon credits. What does that mean? It is very difficult for us to define as individual farmers. And so we need to know where we are now. We need to know how to measure it. We need to know how do we sell this, because as an end user of so many things, whether it's byproducts or whether it's the soil, whether it's the crops we have in the field, we are sequestering carbon on our farms, and we have carbon credits from our dairy farms that can be used. And so we have to know how it is that we can move forward and make sure that that's something that's profitable for us as farmers. There's a lot of solutions we have on our farm. I think we're still learning. Every farmer I talk to in every part of the country, it takes a different style of farming, and we can't be cookie cutter. We can't have a certain style that only benefits one certain style of farm. We have to be able to look at these 2050 goals. We have to look at net zero. We have to look at the pathways and understand we have to have a pathway for every single size farm, not just one size or the other. There are different projects that are getting more attention. Nestle and Starbucks are willing to put money into it, which I think shows us that there's money available to us. And so we just have to really keep continuing to look how and where are those money streams available that will help us as farmers be able to move forward. I think we also have to realize that the Gen Z population is really behind so much of this. And it's amazing to me when I hear and I recognize their purchasing powers and how much they are behind decisions that are being made on things that they want to purchase. They're very concerned about the planet. They're very concerned about how it is that the food is raised. And so we have to show them, and we have to make sure they know that we have a solution to the land. We are not hurting the land. We have a very sustainable product. Not only is it nutritious, but it's also very nutritious for the land as well. And so I think it's very important for us to keep that communication open. And at DMI, we've found some very unique ways to try to communicate that story to them. And just want to say too, you know what, I mentioned before there, but just want to stress this, there are farmers at the table. We have a board of directors that has been involved with this process from the start. And we have opinions in there. There is nothing that is not debated and discussed very strongly when we look at the boardroom. So really want to give a shout out to each one of the board of directors that is helping at DMI, that is helping to make this a very farmer-centric mission. So thank you.
And when you talk about we have to have tailored solutions, last time we had Dairy Livestream, we were talking about genetics. In our industry, our dairy community is so diverse. Our leading state, California, is on the Pacific Ocean, and our second leading state's up in the Great Lakes region. And then Idaho is up on the Canadian border, and it moves back and forth with New York, who is almost, you know, touches the Atlantic Ocean. And then we have Texas down on our southern border. We have a very diverse dairy industry, and with dairy cows located in all the major 50 states. Quick question, Marilyn. It comes from a dairy farmer here that I think is considering a digester. Question is directly this: does Maryland's farm digester change the character of the manure applied to the land? Yeah, so nutrients there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you know, we still have the nutrients, okay, and so we get a byproduct out of that. The solids come out as what we call bedded solids that we use back in the stalls. The liquid, every ounce in is every ounce out, and so the liquid that we get back still has the nutrients in the liquid, and it's spread on the field. It does not have the odor. So our neighbors like it a little better than they did before. Not that that's a reason to put up a digester, but because economically that would not be enough to make it pay. But that is something that we still do have the nutrients. I know there is technology that can capture that phosphorus, capture the nitrogen. There's technology that can pelletize that. I think that is technology we have to really have on coming down the pike, because that's valuable to farmers, and we can control a little more. With us being north of the bay, phosphorus is something we are always looking at, and so it's something we have to be aware of. So being able to capture those nutrients out and pelletize them would be nice. I think that's technology that's in use for some, but really down the pipe.
Thank you, Marilyn. And Marilyn, you talked about getting the cart before the horse. I'd submit that on September 12, 1962, exactly 10 years before I was born, President John Kennedy probably did the same thing when he said, "We choose to go to the moon." Did President Kennedy know on that September day how he would get to the moon? Absolutely not. How America would get to the moon? No. However, he painted a vision and set a goal, and that, in my mind, is the same as what we're talking about, net zero by 2050. Together, dairy can research potential solutions and be a major part of a winning answer as it relates to our present-day climate issues. So with that, let's go to our next poll question before we hear from Jamie Vandermolen. Dairy accounts for what percent of all U.S. greenhouse gases? Select one of the following: 2, 5, 12, or 15. So go ahead and pick that poll answer here. And I can see the poll responses coming in behind the scene here. We're getting some strong responses for one of those, easily winning the day. So as soon as we get over the 50% mark, we'll go ahead and cut that off. And 71% of you said 2%. And that indeed is the right answer. We welcome Jamie Vandermolen to Dairy Livestream. Jamie joined Nutrient 4 years ago. In just a few moments, she'll tell us more about Nutrient, which has an overarching goal to help farmers reduce their environmental footprint and make money doing it. That's an important service because some carbon credit market discussions look more like the wild, wild west of America's pioneer and frontier days. Jamie, how can our dairy community turn an area of nutrients into this generation's win on whey? Of course, whey was a byproduct of cheesemaking that we dumped in fields as fertilizer when I was a child, or fed it directly to pigs. Jamie?
All right. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me here today. I think, you know, congrats to all those that got the 2% right. And that's a really interesting number when you look at it, because 2% feels like such a modest number. And that's in big part due to what Marilyn spoke to, all the things that are happening on her farm and all the things that are happening on the farms and have been for many decades of those who are on the phone. So there's so much that has been done. There's so much yet to celebrate. And I think as we look to the future of dairy and sustainability, we want to think more about how do we continue to make dairy an environmental solution, and not just a little bit less of the problem, right? So as you see that percentage maybe tick down, I think our overall goal is we want to be more of an environmental solution and not just a little bit less of a problem. So today I wanted to talk more about the cash flow that, or the additional revenue streams for farms and what's available and kind of what's to come. But before we do that, a quick background on and Nutrient. Some of you may not be familiar with who Nutrient is. We were a company that was formed 5 years ago by 12 leading dairy cooperatives and the Dairy Checkoff Program. And our main mission continues to be, how can we help dairy farms across the country reduce their environmental footprint in the most economically viable way? And that mission kind of rolls off the tongue, but I always say it's not that first part, which is, you know, how do we reduce the environmental footprint? But the second part, how do we make it economically viable? Which is really the hurdle and the challenge that we see today, right? In order for anything to be sustainable, it needs to make sense for your business today, tomorrow, and for future generations. So Nutrient, along with kind of a team of academic and environmental experts, has spent the last few years exploring what are all of the kind of technology and solutions available for farms today. How do those work from an operational standpoint? What are the economics around those? Do these technologies actually do what they say they do? So doing kind of a third-party evaluation. And through that, I think, again, what we learned is that the cost of the equipment, kind of that cost of the adoption of different technologies and solutions for farms today, remains still one of the biggest barriers for many farms to move forward. So I think we hear a lot of people talking about, you know, we need the dairy industry to monetize environmental benefits or monetize manure or monetize nutrients. Today, I think that value is already realized. What we really need to focus on and what we're really looking at is how do we create markets and find markets for dairy farms to participate in, right? There are a lot of technologies, as Marilyn was just talking about, that can segregate the nutrients or separate phosphorus if that's the issue. But then what happens with the nutrients on the back end, right? Is there a market that these nutrients can then be fed into so that there is realized revenue back to your farm? And I think, you know, a lot of today what we see is kind of grants and other programs, which are really fantastic solutions to help incentivize and kind of fund and finance technologies. But we really need to seek stable markets. So I just wanted to talk through a few different types of markets that we're looking at that you may have heard of that we kind of see emerging and will continue to see emerging over the next several years. The first being ecosystem services markets. I think Corey kind of referred to this as the wild, wild west. And you're probably seeing a lot of, that was from me, you're seeing a lot of information around ecosystem services markets right now, whether it be in the carbon space or the water quality space. But we need to look at how can farms provide, you know, all of the environmental solutions that you're providing, whether it be sequestering carbon or improving soil health or reducing greenhouse gas emissions through feed or manure management changes, or even conversion of manure to biogas. There are a lot of solutions that your farm is doing or could do in the future to capture carbon and improve water quality. So how are we capturing that value through a market and capitalizing on that for farms? And today in the space, like, you know, it's a fairly complex space. You'll see a lot of different kind of markets and programs and aggregators pop up over the last couple of years. And it can be kind of, you know, complicated and intimidating to navigate. So I think this is a space that we want to work in to help make these markets more accessible and approachable for farms so that down the road you are able to transact environmental credits. Another kind of market space and opportunity that's promising is for manure-based products. And I think Marilyn mentioned this as well, but creating almost kind of a pelletized product. So as we look ahead, we need to better, as the dairy industry, identify how we can both use nutrients more efficiently on the farm, but also how do we create, and, you know, nutrients that are valuable that can be stored and transported and sold into markets off the farm. So that's a big focus of what we're looking at today, both through kind of the net zero initiative that Marilyn focused in and the greater industry. And, you know, a third market that many of us kind of have as another example is this renewable natural gas space. So creating biogas and programs that are looking to sell into markets like the Low Carbon Fuel Standard or LCFS or Renewable Fuel Standard RFs to both incentivize production and use of low carbon fuels. So dairy-based or manure-based renewable natural gas generates actually some of the highest credit values under these programs because of their carbon intensity scores. And I think, you know, the message kind of around this space today is that you are sitting on something that is incredibly valuable, which is why you see so many people and companies and vendors kind of entering this space. If you look at kind of cows production, if they produce 20 million BTUs a year with the heated digesters and they're getting $100 per million BTUs. So that's, I'm going to blow off a couple numbers here, but we'll get to the point. So 20 million BTUs is worth $2,000. And now many farms are being approached and offered less than 150. So if you know that your cow could potentially make 2,000 worth of revenue, and you're getting less than 10% of that from a project, that's something that you need to think about and realize the value that you're kind of sitting on. Now, there are a lot of things that go into the, kind of these partnerships in the renewable natural gas space between farms and vendors. But a space that's emerging and growing, and farms definitely need to realize the immense value that you have. So you're all, again, the point of this is you're all kind of extraordinary businesswomen and businessmen. And, you know, if the market were there, you could provide the product or service. So as we look ahead and what we want to do in dairy, we really want to focus on creating and fostering some of these markets so that you have the ability to sell things more than to sell more than your milk.
Thank you, Jamie. As a reminder, we're getting some good questions in here. Go ahead into the GoToWebinar control panel if you've heard some things from Rob and Jamie or Marilyn you'd like to ask them about. And we'll go to one final poll question before we hear from Chris Wolf. What was the only continent to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions from 2005 to 2015? Select one of the following: Asia, Europe, North America, or South America? So we'll go ahead and wait for those responses to come in, and then we'll have some comments from Dr. Chris Wolf. So let's go ahead and close that off. The leading answer and the correct answer is North America, which reduced its greenhouse gas emissions by 5%. And that source of that information is the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations. We welcome Cornell's Chris Wolf to the program. Chris, from an economist viewpoint, you have shared with me that you are glad we are making an effort to own the sustainability issue. Why is that?
Well, thanks, Corey. Good to be back here again. Yeah, I think, Robin and Marilyn and Jamie have done a really good job of kind of framing in the issue and getting at a lot, the fact that there's all these different dimensions and stuff, right? And just like when we were talking about kind of the animal welfare issues a month or two back, right? Part of the deal is that these environmental and sustainability issues are not going away. And so, you know, being part of the conversation is important because it's going to happen in some sense, no matter what. And so driving the conversation, being involved in these discussions, and just illustrating all the things, you know, that everybody's talked about here today about what the dairy industry is doing and how they're contributing to be part of the solution, right, is important, because that wouldn't be seen otherwise, because frankly, the general public doesn't know it. And so that's, you know, that's a big part of what's been going on. And, you know, the sustainability is a term that gets pulled out by a lot of different people to mean a lot of different things, kind of depending on what their issue is. You know, today we're talking about environmental sustainability, and I think that's, you know, what most people think of. But for the farms, it all comes down to, right, to the farm financial aspects. And Jamie just did a nice job of talking about some, you know, some things that are possible to take advantage of it. You know, dairy farming, well, the dairy industry in general, but in particular at the farm, it's very capital intensive, even relative to other types of agriculture, very capital intensive. And wise, you know, investments are a key to longevity, right? Bad investments is what puts you in, you know, in trouble. And so right now we're looking at a situation where this policy and regulations, the uncertainty around it at the state and federal level are a real impediment and a challenge to making wise investment decisions. The flip side of it is that there's a lot of opportunities, like what Jamie just talked about, opportunities that, of things that you might be able to turn these potential, you know, what we used to think of as a byproduct or a waste product into a co-product. And so, you know, that's part of the solution, I think, for lots of different people. The challenge is the moving target of the environmental regulations and policies, because quite frankly, we're learning new things every day, and then we have different challenges at different states, and you know, and then also, you know, nationally and internationally. And then, as far as opportunities, I think in addition to the nutrients, I think it's really important to look for ways not just to meet these standards, but to seek any marketing advantages that there might be. You know, so the getting the story out there and getting it labeled appropriately and understanding, seeking any additional ways to get compensated for the environmental services, I think is really important aspect that we need to look at. In some countries are kind of further ahead than we are with that, and maybe we can learn some things from the way other countries are doing things. And at the end of the day, I think at the farm level, you got to look for the opportunities that present themselves, but make certain you use a very sharp pencil when you're, considering the financial consequences of these different investments and practices.
Thank you, Chris. We're going to open up questions here. And the first question comes in from a viewer here. And I think we're going to break this into a couple parts. I'm going to send it to Robin first here, as some of her research will focus in this area when it comes to feed and feed efficiency. And if another commentator wants to join in, please do so after Robin. The viewer writes, manure is only part of the carbon generation equation with dairy farming. The other major source of rumen generated gases is methane. Should the dairy industry participate in carbon markets to offset carbon or in methane? So let's talk a little bit first, Robin, about some of the work that's being done in the methane area as it comes to feed additives and what that journey looks like. And then we'll probably open it up to Jamie and Marilyn on the overall arching, like, how should we be walking into this space into the carbon markets? So, Robin?
Yeah, so in terms of opportunities to mitigate or reduce methane emissions through feed additives, there's really exciting numbers coming out of groups like UC Davis testing some of these newer technologies. So algae-based products, the 3NLP products, and they're showing sustained and marked reductions in methane emissions, which are kind of the two things that we really need to be focusing on if we're going to be using a feed additive. There's a lot of feed additives that have been tested over the years, and the major challenge with them is they work for about a 3-week period, and then the rumen microbiota adapts and kind of reverts back to its original fermentation state. But some of these seaweed products and the 3NLP certainly seem to be a good solution there. I will refrain from providing an ignorant commentary on the economics of those because I am woefully inequipped to be able to tell you how much they cost. But what I can say is that on an international scale, methane is going to be a really, really important point of discussion over the next several years. And part of that is because methane is a different greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide and nitrous oxide, which are in the atmosphere for a long period of time. Methane is only in the atmosphere for a short period of time. And what that means is its global warming potential has different temporal dynamics than CO2 and nitrous oxide. And historically, we've treated it all the same. But what we're finding out is if you're holding methane emissions constant, or in a good scenario, if you're decreasing methane emissions, you should have respectively basically a credit of zero warming in the constant scenario, or in the scenario where you're decreasing emissions, you are actually underestimating the benefit in terms of the warming potential. So what that means is we're overestimating the global warming contribution of methane under our current calculations. For situations, most situations here in the US where we're holding emissions constant or we're decreasing them. So as we're looking toward opportunities to talk about things like net zero, of course, the dairy industry is kind of defined that on a carbon basis. If we define it on a warming basis, methane becomes a really important part of the equation and somewhere that we can do some minimal things like adding a feed additive or changing the way that we manage manure and have really, really incredibly impactful differences in terms of the numbers outputted from a farm.
So the second part of that is really participating in carbon credit markets, and probably that rolls right into what advice would you give to dairy farmers who are approached about signing carbon credit contracts this early in the journey. Jamie?
Sure, yeah, and if I could kind of add on to that. So, manure is definitely not the only kind of solution that we're looking at or way to participate in these different programs and markets. There are kind of four different areas of the farm that we focus on when we think about the overall footprint. So feed production and practice changes, and that those are things like no-till and cover crops and renewable fertilizers. That's 26% of the footprint, and there are opportunities there to improve soil health and participate in those markets. If you look at manure handling, that's about 33% of the footprint. And through changes like anaerobic digestion into biogas and technologies to kind of capture some of the nutrients we talked about, there are changes there that you can make and opportunities to participate in markets. And then again, to what Robin was saying, kind of this cow care piece, which is about 34% of the footprint of the farm, things like feed additives, there's potential to participate in markets and optimize feed rations and genetics. And then kind of on-farm energy efficiency and renewable energy, which is about 5% of the farm's footprint. There are opportunities through kind of LED lighting, varial speed vacuum pumps, a lot of different areas within this section that, that farms can make improvements to. So there are lots of plays that, that farms can make to participate in future kind of markets. I would say the important thing for a farm to do right now is to ensure that you're kind of recording everything you do. And if you are approached to participate in a market like this, or you do have interest in participating in markets, a good place to start is even Nutrient. We're happy to speak with you about the potential opportunities and what might be the best fit for you. Just kind of going through different kind of practices and technologies that you're using to identify if it's the best time or place to kind of start to participate.
Thank you, Jamie. The you know, the other thing is, especially in the Great Lakes region, dairy farmers, those are some great statistics that Jamie pointed out here, especially on the forage production at 26% and manure handling at 33%. We do an annual survey here with our readers of Hordes Dairymen, and in many of the upper Midwest states and the Northeast states, and even the Southeast for that matter, a number of our farms have woodlots, which we often don't talk about on our farms. And that is going to be another way to, obviously, a big way of sequestering carbon. And we will, as dairy farmers, if you have woodlots, you got to remember that's a very valuable carbon tank. So keep that in mind as we go through this journey. I'm going to take a – go ahead, Marilyn.
Can I add in there stream bank fencing? You know, there's so many farms in the Northeast that have done participated in the stream bank fencing, where, you know, 25 to 30 feet on either side of the stream is fenced off for vegetation and wildlife. And not only is it a place for a lot of different species of wildlife, but it's also, there's a lot of carbon being sequestered in that stream bank fencing.
Thank you, Marilyn. This question comes from a dairy farmer who was on Dairy Livestream in the past. And this is a big picture idea, and I want to go straight to it. It just landed. The real seal was a focal point of our marketing in the past. Why not create a C symbol or a C seal that shows our carbon utilization in food production? Any initial reaction to that? Marilyn?
I'm just going to say yes. We do need to do that. And, you know, I just read an article about Unilever creating on some of their, you know, they have a thing in Europe where they're scanning and you can scan on the food product and they see their carbon, the carbon footprint. It's a way for us to communicate that to consumers. If consumers are very concerned about the carbon, we need to be able to show them how we are solutions to the planet, not demonizing it like we're presented in certain areas. You know, it's a great way for us to do that. I love that. I jotted that note down, and I love that thought and idea. So thank you.
Yeah, I would agree. I think having something like that in place is definitely something that we would want to strive for. And that kind of goes back to how do we as the dairy industry kind of better aggregate and get real-time data on what's happening on farms so that we can in the future participate in, you know, programs like this or you know, packaging changes. So
as we knit this story together, and it's going to take some time, that last comment that came in from that thoughtful dairy farmer knits into this one, and it was the second question that just landed. She said, I was astounded with the numbers it took that we changed from 2007 to 2017. Could you please put that information on the back in the screen. I'm going to repeat it. But the average consumer isn't going to care about all the statistics that we cited here. We need to know that. We need to quantify. That's very part of the story. But they want to know what we're doing in a very simple way. So those statistics, again, comparing 2007 to 2017, were a gallon of milk requires 30% less water, 21% less land, and 19% smaller carbon footprint. 30% less water, 21% less land, and 19% smaller carbon footprint. So that's the answer to that. Chris, we're going to come over to you here. And I think one of the issues here, when we look at opportunities, and we're not going to talk politics here, but we have a real different administration here compared to the previous administration in Washington, D.C. And so how can farmers invest in long-term projects when the market for those practices might be different in less than 5 to 10 years? I think part of that answer is that we're on a trajectory in a certain direction. We might have hills and valleys here, but Chris, what do you say to that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, right? Because I do think the uncertainty is a real impediment to this type of investment. And like you said, when you have one administration kind of pushing harder maybe, and then the next administration, which may be going in the same direction, but at a different rate, right? Then there's what an economist would call an option value to waiting to see how things are going to shake out before you make the investment. And so, but the other thing that I think you're going to want to look for is any programs that provide incentives, right? So there are state and federal incentives. And so anytime that lines up with the general direction that you're moving, then farms should be aware of what incentives might be available through FSA or through tax credits from the state or other things of that nature. And, you know, I don't think we are in a world where we're going to be rolling it back, right? The question is how far are we going to go? You know, what kind of things are we going to put in? Hopefully we're going to, you know, put in programs that allow for farms to use their own comparative advantages to adapt to them, right? Instead of defining practices, let's let farmers figure it out, because if you tell them what they need to get done, farmers are really good at figuring out how to get it done the most efficient way for themselves.
And if I could add to that too, kind of beyond just changes that would happen in the administration, much of what we see today in the markets is voluntary, right? And it's driven by consumer preference. And based off of what we heard Robin say and Marilyn say and others, I don't think that the consumer preference is necessarily backing down on their sustainability preferences. So I think you can continue to see these markets drive forward.
You know, one of the things we've done on our farms for so long, and when I finally had a chance as an adult to get outside of the upper Midwest, my little shell that I grew up in, and get out to some of our western states and see what they do and substrates, or more specifically byproduct feeds, it's really a big part of the sustainability story. Cows are some of the greatest recycling plants in the world. So Robin, we'll probably start with you here on this, but how does dairy's great work in recycling substrates such as byproduct feeds fit into this sustainability story?
Yeah, so some kind of shocking numbers to me. At the global scale, the food production agricultural systems produce 5 times the energy and protein needed to feed a population of 10 billion people. So we talk a lot at the global scale about the need to produce more food. We have a lot of inefficiency in our system. If we're producing 5 times the energy and protein needed to feed a population that's greater than what we have on the planet today, and we still have nearly, half a billion people that habitually go without consuming sufficient food. So I think, a lot of that commentary has evolved into this discussion of what they're calling circular agricultural systems, which is the concept of zero waste system. And ruminant animals are absolutely essential in a circular agriculture system because they have this incredible ability to convert material that humans can or will not consume into high quality, low energy protein sources and micronutrient sources. And so, the role of dairy in the US in recycling byproduct feeds into dairy products is really tremendous. And becoming we already are a leader in that space, but doing a little bit more communication at the global scale to exemplify how we've gone about that and the great opportunities that are there in consuming these kind of non-traditional foods, I think is a big part of the future of sustainable dairy cow nutrition, which is slightly different than sustainable nutrition when we think about people.
We're going to go to speed round here for our commentators. And so I'm going to call on someone. And if anyone has something to add, jump right in here. But we got a number of questions and I want to try to get through all our audience questions. So this one's kind of a big picture here. I think we're going to send it to Jamie first. What is the message we should send to farmers? Is the goal to manage farms in a way to reduce carbon, or do we want to hold it constant? Which would be ideal? Digesters and energy? Which would be ideal for digesters if we would want to reduce it? So what is the message here early on in this journey? And I think that message changes over if you look at that horizon of 2050.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I don't think that in kind of reading through that question, I don't think it's one size fits all for all farms, right? And so we definitely don't want a message that's digesters are the only solutions out there for dairy farms. I think the message we want to tell is that dairy is the environmental solution. And hopefully we'll live in a world one day where kind of that rural and urban lives are more seen together. And having a dairy in your community is actually a benefit because you get electricity from the dairy. You run your car off the dairy. So there are positive things that come out of that. I think we want to stay away from kind of choosing one solution or the other, but know that there are a lot of solutions that fit for a lot of farms, and it could be pasture-based farming, which is also a great way to farm. So I think it's knowing that there are a variety of solutions that are out there and showing people that dairy can be that solution.
Well, Corey, if I can just add to that, you know, we don't yet know all the solutions that we have. I think that's why it's so critical for us to invest in technology. You know, we look at our smartphones and we didn't know 10 years ago what a cell phone was going to be able to do. And now look at us, you know, carrying around everything in our pocket. And, you know, I look at the next 30 years in dairy and just trust that we are going, if we're going to continue to invest in the science and the technology, we're going to get there because we don't even yet know the solutions that we have. We just know we're going after those solutions.
Yeah, speaking of we go to the moon, there's more computing power today in that smartphone than everything that was on that panel that landed in 1969. Question here, and speaking about herd sizes here, this is a very good point and question. Curious if someone has followed dairy farm operations that have followed nutrient management plans that have been updated every 3 years. And obviously those plans are really a phosphorus based thing over time, but you know, this dairy farmer says, I've seen on a small scale, even following my nutrient plan, that my phosphorus is going a different direction in my field. And I think back, Marilyn, of course, and maybe Chris wants to take this, back in 1986, my family farm was one of the first in our area to put in a manure system to start repurposing and making better use of nutrients. So I think the short answer is yes to that question. But anyone want to grab that?
Yeah, well, I can tell you in Michigan, when we were looking at the early adopters of the Michigan Agricultural Environmental Assurance Program, which, as you said, they had to write nutrient management plans, and it was phosphorus is the binding constraint there, right? That it was a pretty evident early on that focusing on that and treating that phosphorus, you know, spreading only at the agronomic rates and stuff, a lot of people changed their fertilization practices because instead of just calling up and getting kind of the same fertilizer every year for the crops, if you spread it agronomically and stuff and you took advantage of that phosphorus that you had, right, which then gives some value to that, because instead of just throwing on more phosphorus and ignoring the value that the manure added, it definitely, and some farms were already doing that, but other farms just focused their attention on it and they absolutely lowered their use and their costs.
Next question, we're going to definitely send this one to Marilyn. And I the answer is absolutely yes. But the question is, how do dairy farmers view water supply to developing improvements in sustainability of dairy farming? definitely part of the equation. And Marilyn, you live it every day. And when you keep saying the Bay, you're close to the Chesapeake Bay, which has been a big part of this journey. It's out, you know, surrounds Maryland, and water comes from Pennsylvania and a number of other states around there. Marilyn, take that question, please.
Sure. Thank you. You know, water quality is, and I would say, yes, for me personally, it is the Chesapeake Bay. There's six different states. New York is the northern state, most state that dumps into the Chesapeake Bay. And so we are very concerned about, you know, it's always on our radar. But, you know, it doesn't matter where we are farming. Water quality is an issue. And I know there's, you know, if there's Wisconsin farmers on, Corey, you know this, water quality is a really big deal in Wisconsin, and as it is in Michigan, and as it is in Washington, maybe for various reasons, for different reasons on our farms, but water quality is a big deal. And I don't think just water quality, but water itself. When I look at the aquifers in the Southwest, and I hear stories from farmers about them being concerned about the amount of water that they need to be able to farm and the availability of that water, it is an issue. And so I think we also need technologies in the future that will address our address the water usage and maybe water recycling.
Thank you. Earlier I made that comment about woodlots, and a person questions, you know, doesn't corn sequester more carbon than woodlot? What I'm going to say to that, without going through what each plant does, look at your farm holistically. Look at the opportunities. Keep a notebook. Keep something in your smartphone and start looking at your farm when you're driving a tractor or doing some other things, and think about what that might look like. We're going to take the last question here, and we're going to go round robin, starting with Robin, pun intended. And this was the very first question that came in. So what does the average consumer think sustainability means? 15 seconds or less. Robin, you're first.
Gut response, they have no idea, but it sounds good.
Then we'll go to Marilyn.
Agreed. It is defined differently from everyone. The thing we have to know is, and we have to do is keep telling our story, because we have an extremely sustainable story.
Jamie.
Yep. Agreed. I think there's a lot of key terms being flown or flying around in that space, and we just need to continue to help them kind of define that and tell that story.
Chris, the final word is yours.
I think it probably means something depending on what they've been looking at recently and what their context is from their personal experience. So today, I think it probably, for a lot of them, would relate to carbon because that's what they've been reading about. But I think it's a fair question. It means a lot of different things.
Well, thank you. Our next dairy live stream will focus on sustainability, dairy's position in the marketplace. And we're going to talk a little bit more from the food side here. This conversation will focus on the many conversations coming from consumers and leaders in many of the world's countries. So we're going to have panelists not only from North America, but from Europe on this one as well. Our goal in August is to do just as the title implies, have a discussion as to what sustainability means for dairy compared to other food choices. The show will air in exactly 2 weeks on Wednesday, August 4th, 2021, at 11 a.m. Central Daylight Time. Will be archived on the Hordes Dairyman YouTube and podcast channels the very next day. I look forward to seeing you then. On behalf of Robin White, Marilyn Hershey, Jamie Vander Molen, and Chris Wolf, I'm Corey Geiger, your host. Thank you for joining us today. We wish you all a good day. Goodbye, everyone.